Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And I'm Rocky Comic Boom.
And this is your Comic Source Awards for 2020 Part 2. We're splitting it up this year for you. We figured, you know, maybe not have a 3.5-4 hour episode like we usually do. We're still going to be that long, but at least we'll split it up into two for you. So maybe it'll make it a little bit easier to handle. So if you haven't listened to Part 1 yet, it was released the day before this one. So go and check out Part 1, where we talk mostly about the series, different series that we like, limited series, issues, moments, things like that. And that does remind me, even though I gave my best moment to Superboy Prime lifting up that car, and I mentioned—
taking back an award.
What's that?
He's taking back an award.
No, I'm not taking it back. I'm still giving it. I'm still giving my award to that. And I did also mention the Wonder Woman chainsaw moment, the same one that Rocky mentioned. But I had another moment, and for whatever reason, I totally forgot to mention it. And so I do want to mention it just because it's such a fun moment. And I think that Rocky will remember this as well. It's from Chip Zdarsky's Stillwater, which we talked a lot about on yesterday's episode. And for those not familiar, so basically within the city limits of this town, you can't die. You don't age. Your body doesn't age, so you don't die. And if you lose a limb, a hand, a foot, whatever, if you're hit by a car, you basically just heal. And so the kids don't get to grow up or anything. And there's this scene, there's this kind of fascist-leaning deputy cop named Ted in the series. And the guy's just a real jerk. And he's kind of the right-hand man of the judge that I gave best villain to. and he does all kinds of dastardly crap. And there's this one scene where he's on a rooftop and he's watching over the main character in the series who's just recently come back to that town. And normally they don't allow outsiders, but they allow the main character back because he was born there. So anyway, this kid who knows how old he is, but his body's only 10 years old, let's say, or 12 years old. His name's Galen. So anyway, this deputy Ted is watching this guy who's come back to town, and Galen comes up to him on the roof and goes, "Why do you do that?" And Ted's like, "What, drink coffee?" He's like, "Yeah, it doesn't do anything for you. It doesn't wake you up. We don't have addictions anymore." And Ted says something to the effect, "Well, you weren't old enough to really develop habits that made you happy, you know, because you weren't old enough when the thing happened where they all started living. But sometimes you want to feel like things don't change. You know, there's comfort in being who you always were." And Galen's response to that is, "So that means you were a controlling dick who thought he could run the town before the event happened?" And Ted looks at him, shoves him off the roof, and turns around and walks away. It's just a great, because he could do that, right? Because it's not any long-term effects for Galen. And if there's anything that kind of sums up Stillwater, it's that moment. And I remembered wanting to put it on my list, and then I forgot. And then when I went to bed after we recorded yesterday, I was going back over the things in my head. I'm like, "Oh my God, I forgot to mention, we talked so much about Stillwater." So I wanted to mention that moment because it's great.
Yeah, no, that's a good one.
Yeah, you remember that when you were reading it, Rocky, just how so callously just like shoved the kid off the roof. Like, "Get out of here, kid. You bother me." Like, literally, we've all been bothered by children. I don't condone violence to children at all whatsoever. But, you know, there's times where we all wish we could, you know, fly off the handle like that and just teach a kid a lesson. So no permanent consequences, but it's just so great. "Oh, that means you were a dick before this happened. Got it. Understood." So. Anyway, let's get to the categories for tonight. We're going to kick it off with best artist. And we'll start with you, Rocky. Who do you have for best artist?
This was such a difficult one. There are so many to choose from, but I did narrow it down, and I narrowed it down to a couple that I don't think are going to surprise anybody, but one I probably will surprise some. But honorable mentions, I got three honorable mentions. And the first honorable mention is Eddie Burroughs on the Freedom Fighters. And I credit you, Jace, from our last previous night's episode, because I Eddie Burroughs wasn't on my radar because I forgot that Freedom Fighters ended in 2020. So technically, he's a fantastic artist. His work on the Freedom Fighters is excellent. So Eddie Burroughs and Freedom Fighters. I also really like Ty Templeton, Batman, The Adventure Continues. Ty Templeton, I think, is a highly underrated artist. I think he's fantastic. I love his art. I think he harkens back to a simpler era, but he, the simplicity of his lines and his drawings and his, he's great with action. And it just harkens back to the Batman animated adventures. And I just love his work. Also I really like, Chris Burnham, in a series called Die, Die, Die. It's written by Robert Kirkman for Image. I'm going to be mentioning Die, Die, Die elsewhere on this, on the, in these categories, but Chris Burnham's art is so visceral. He's so great at drawing violence and gorgeous and really truly gory scenes, yet also he's great at drawing humor and satire. And it's just his line work is gritty and he's very good at facial expressions and conveying emotion in his characters. Just fantastic. I love his work on Die, Die, Die. But the winner goes to, for me, is Rachel and Terry Dodson, the Dodsons on Adventure Men, written by Matt Fraction. Often Rachel and Terry Dodson, in the last few years, they've been doing mostly, I find, cover work, and it's rare to find them do, it's increasingly rare to find them do an entire comic book, but each issue of Adventure Men, and the first arc is like four issues long, is about like 40 issues long. It's just amazing. And it takes place it's almost like an old serial. They're excellent at drawing Adventure Men. It's almost like it's the Rocketeer, reminded me of a lot of like a Rocketeer adventure. And it's a combination of sort of like an imaginary story, who's Adventure Man, who is this Adventure Man, and then a modern day take of a woman who sort of assumes that role. And it's just a wonderful story. And Matt Fraction does such a great job writing it. And the Dodsons, their art is just, it's so visceral. They draw women so well, gorgeous women, but you know, they draw really, you know, pretty people in general. it's a joy to read, and it's a visual feast. And that's my picks.
Yeah. The Dodsons, they, you never go wrong. I mean, very professional, always great storytelling, technically very beautiful. I did find that right around the time that Star Wars took over the Star Wars license, that their style changed a little bit. They started using a little heavier line. If you go back and look at, like, he did a lot of the covers for the first Harley Quinn series.
Yeah. And Wonder Woman too. They did a lot of Wonder Woman covers. Yeah.
His line work is a little it's a little more fine there. So I'm interested in having him on sometime to talk about his artistic evolution. Anyway, Manny, who do you have for best artist?
No doubt Dodsons are fantastic. I remember I loved their work that they did on, I think it's called Red One.
Yeah.
For Image. Yes. That was so good. There was only one or two. I think it was like two issues or something like that. It wasn't very long, but their covers are great. And they're also very, very nice at shows. So, Jace, do you want to tell the people who my pick for best artist is? Just because it's not.
Did you pick Fabok again for Batman Three Jokers?
Yeah, I picked Fabok again.
Did you pick him last year? I can't remember.
I pick him anytime he draws a damn book. And I'm sorry. I can't help it. At any time Fabok does a book, and you know this, this goes back years when he was working on Detective, is when he was doing Eternal, when he was doing Justice League, and then and as he was progressing, I kept telling you, man, this is the guy. This is my favorite artist. And to this day, he's still my favorite artist. And this is to say something, because I did not like Three Jokers, but I sure as hell loved looking at every damn page of it.
Yeah. So you did not. I'm looking back 4 years. You have not picked him quite a while.
Oh, well,
you picked Mitch Garrett's in 2017 and 2018.
That was Mr. Miracle.
Yeah, you picked Mitch 2 years in a row, and then last year you picked Clay Mann for Heroes in Crisis. Oh, it's been a while. So you haven't been.
Yeah, but he hasn't. Also, to be fair, he hasn't really done anything.
That's true. He's been working on Three Jokers for quite a while.
So, yeah, I mean, I just can't help it. Just his everything. I just the way he draws, the storytelling that he, the emotions that he and makes it, and the covers that he did for it. It's all fantastic work. It didn't have the story to back it up. And
if the story was a little better, I mean, I don't know, buy it, don't read it, and just look at the art.
that's kind of how I felt after issue one. I was so unhappy with the way that issue ended, and it was just so messy that the rest of it, I was like, well, at least I'm going to get to enjoy the art. Thus, that's what I did.
Yeah, so. I thought the story was decent, but I was a little disappointed with the ending. But I thought getting up those first two issues, I thought were pretty good. The final one I had some issues with, but like I said, gorgeous art.
Part of the and we talked about it on the first half of this, is that Tynan was doing a Joker story. He's doing a Joker story. And I don't remember, somewhere else we had seen the Joker also.
And it's had the Joker's 80th anniversary last
year. That's right. Yeah. So, and then in Death Metal, we had the Joker Who Laughs. The Batman Who Laughs, which is the same thing. So I'm just like, come on. Like, I mean, I finally had joined Jace's cult of enough of the Joker. And, you know, so we'll get to see him again though in Justice League in a couple of months. I know Jace is so hyped up over that.
I can't wait to watch Justice League. I'm be right there.
Rated R.
I'm gonna camp out in front of my own TV. I'm so excited. Camp out at the theater. I'm gonna camp out in front of my own TV.
I was happy to see Jason Fabok doing comics in 2020, even if it was a couple of years late.
Yeah, and I'm really excited. He said he's no longer doing work for DC. Not that he won't again in the future, but like a lot of creators, with all the people that have left, he just doesn't have a relationship with anybody that's left there in editorial. So they did finally offer him something, but by that time he had gone elsewhere to pick up work somewhere else. So I'm very curious to see. I hope it's still in comics. I hope he's not doing like video games or something else. I hope it's in comics, and I hope to see more work from him, because he's really dynamic. So let me go to my pick. This was really tough. In a way, I kind of wanted to give it to Miko Suyan and Jason Badawer for their excellent work in Joker, Harley, Criminal Sanity, which I talked about yesterday. But I picked Miko not too long ago when he was teamed up with Louis LaRosa for Bloodshot Salvation. So I didn't want to repeat there. I like to, mix it up. But Dan Mora for his Once and Future, I'll mention. Kafu for his work in Iron Man. But again, like I mentioned with Iron Man as a series, it's only been a few issues, so I didn't want to go that route. Jamal Campbell for Far Sector, but again, it was only a few issues. There were some delays there. I mentioned the incredible work and improvement in her art that I feel like Elena Casagrande has experienced. Her work in Black Widow, as opposed to work I've seen from her in the past, is transcendent. So I also considered her. I think Bruno Redondo in that Suicide Squad run by Tom Taylor that we all mentioned yesterday that we really love. I thought about him as well. But ultimately, I went with an artist on an independent book. She's co-creator. It's Kieran Gillen and Stephanie Hans on Die, which now, normally, I'm the first one to say I like clean lines. I like classic comic book art. It needs to be colored a certain way, and it just needs to have a certain look. That's what I enjoy. That's what I was used to growing up. I mean, the sort of watercolor or fully painted or digitally painted kind of thing. When I was growing up, same thing with Comic Boom, you just didn't see that type of art in comics. It wasn't possible with the printing techniques at the time. So, I mean, part of the reason we have such a hard time choosing best artists is because the medium has grown so much in terms of what you can do with, computerized coloring, digital tools, and new print processes. It's, with the quality of the paper, it's not newsprint anymore, and everything is just different now. And so when you look at something like Stephanie Hans on Die, the thing that is so great about it is the fact that she can be a little looser, use kind of a watercolor technique, and it is so evocative of the emotions that the characters are going through. And if you're not familiar, Die is a story about some kids who were playing a Dungeons and Dragon type game when they were like around 15 and got sucked into the world of the game they were actually playing. And now one of them has been sort of corrupted by that world. And he, years and years later, when everybody else has grown up, he pulls them all back in because he stayed there and was trapped. And that's how he got corrupted. So he pulls them all back in and is forcing them to play the game again. And they each have a magical die of a different size. You know, somebody has a D6 and somebody has a D12 and so on and so forth. And they all have various powers. And it's an incredible series and it's really great. And it wouldn't be anywhere near as impactful or emotional if it had that kind of traditional comic book art that I normally like. So ultimately I went with Stephanie Hans for Die, and also her cover work on the series is really great as well. So yeah, I thought it was kind of a no brainer. Like when I thought about best artist this year, she was the first one that popped in my head, and I did a little more research and I was like, well, what about this person, that person? Everybody else had like one reason or another where I thought, well, it doesn't quite rise to the level of what Stephanie did this year. So she's my pick for best artist.
Good choice.
Yeah, and I know Manny has been wanting to get in because he actually plays D&D, or used to when he had time before he was doing a million interviews a week. Did you ever get into it?
I haven't finished it. I got into it. It's just I got so far behind. Yeah. Yeah, actually my last group that I joined, I did 2 weeks and then I said, I can't do it. I was like the stress of being here playing this game while I know I have these other things I need to do.
Yeah.
I can't do it. So I felt bad, but and I want to. My daughter's been begging me for us to join a group again. But Jesus, that's like 3 or 4 hours a week that I have to allocate. I need 3 or 4 hours a week.
Yep. Gotcha. All right. Well, let's move on to best cover artist next.
Yes.
All right, Manny, you're up. What do you got?
So I kind of feel bad for this pick, but it's my favorite pick because of a specific line of covers. And it's like, I feel like my pick is so cliche, but it's my pick. I get to pick whoever I want. So I'm picking Alex Ross. Specifically though, for his Marvel Timeless covers that he did. And then some of those covers for Iron Man that he did that I thought were just so good. All his covers are great. And
you were consistent because
his Immortal Hulk ones, you know,
that's what you picked last year.
But the ones that he did this year, and then I also watched a documentary on him creating that piece because it's part of a large mural that they have over at Marvel in New York. But you know, each Marvel character having kind of their own cover and just seeing the detail on them and everything, the way he did, I love the way he did the X-Men in them. I thought they were so good. And that's really what it was, just because I was able to pick up each one of those books, not physically, but digitally, because like Jesus, that's a lot, but, and really enjoy that artwork, really enjoy those characters. So that's really what's behind that specific pick was those pieces of art. And then also I just happened to, part of that virtual Comic-Con, I picked up my first Alex Ross lithograph.
Oh, that's great.
I also got a signed lithograph from him that's in my office now that I'm very proud of.
Yeah, last year
that's awesome.
Alex Ross for his Immortal Hulk covers. So at least you switched it up for the Marvel.
They're really good. I really like them. The timeless ones. It's just part of, you just see so many characters in each of them, and I think part of my bias has to do with the fact that I watched the documentary and watched him talk about how, you know, why he did certain characters a certain way and so on. So I'm invested in it.
Anytime you pick Alex Ross as best artist or best cover artist, I feel like nobody can ever argue that's not ever a wrong answer. You know,
I know, but exactly. I also feel like it's such a there's him and then there's a lot of other people that are great too. But
now, when you talk about the artist that makes the most money doing comic art, you're right. It's Alex Ross. Probably Jim Lee's, you know, below that. And then there's a huge gap and then there's everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, I know that Todd Knock does fantastic covers. Also the Terry Dodson. I love the covers. I know that Kyle Boom had talked about it earlier, especially how the way that they handle females characters. I love it. It's so good.
All right. Well, Boom, who do you have? Best comic artist?
Alex Ross is definitely on my list, my top four. I almost had another tie here, but as Manny was talking, I decided I'd make an executive decision and pick my number one. I got four. In fourth place, I put Alex Ross for all the reasons that Manny mentioned. I don't need to elaborate on that. Third place for me, I put it Robert Hack. Is such a fantastic cover artist. He's done a series of cover artists for Dynamite, particularly for the Betty and Veronica. And there was a Betty Veronica Vampirella Red Sonja miniseries. It was 12 issues long. Every Robert Hack variant cover for those series, I've only got a handful of them because it's so hard to get all the ones with Dynamite because they just print so many. But trying to get just a Robert Hack variants is difficult. But I got five or six. Absolutely gorgeous. He's done a lot of work for Sabrina and what have you. I know for sure he's done a whole slew in 2020. But Robert Hack, I love his work.
Is this his? Can you see it on my screen?
No, I don't believe that's right. No, that's the series, but that's not, I don't believe that's a Robert Hack cover. No. Robert Hack, if you go to, my favorite Robert Hack cover would be on issue 10.
Okay. Let me go to issue 10
of that. Just go down. I mean, cause there's, you'll find this a bit. That spicy space.
Oh yeah.
I love that cover. It's actually totally coincidentally. That's my favorite Robert Hack cover. I absolutely love it. It was, I was lucky enough to get it. It's a variant cover, but it's not like one in 10. It's actually a standard cover you can order. And I couldn't believe how my luck in getting it, he's kind of got that old school kind of art, but with just enough of that sort of like little bit of an adult sort of like Archie feel to it, but as a sexiness to it. Reminds me a little bit of Dave Stevens at times.
Yeah.
Combination of Dave Stevens and Dan Parent. And I absolutely love his style. But yeah. So that's my third. My in second place, I have to go with Lucio Perillo. And he's done a whole slew of Dynamite covers, so many, Lucio Perillo. And he's just fantastic. I mean, anything this guy does. In fact, the only reason I was, the only reason I tolerated the artist for Action Comics, John Romita Jr., the only reason I could tolerate his Action Comics run was because Lucio Perillo was doing the variant covers for Action Comics for a while, and it made Superman tolerable despite Bendis being the writer on it, all thanks to Lucio Perillo's covers. But great covers. And you got a couple. Yeah, he's done so many.
Yeah, he's done a lot.
But my favorite overall that I want to give a shout out to, this guy's very prevalent, but he finished his 75 issue cover B run for Harley Quinn. That's Frank Cho. But just amazing. In fact, he's got his issue 75, his final issue 75 variant cover for Harley Quinn. Punchline was on the cover, and I still think it's underrated. I think a lot of people are ignoring that final issue, but it's that's it there. And it's just, he always has this style of having just beautiful things in the background, and every one of his covers for his Harley Quinn run, the cover B, it was always something different. He was experimenting with different line work, the thin, thick, the whole nine yards. Even different body shapes for Harley Quinn, and which is kind of funny because he got into that dispute, I think, a number of years ago with Greg Rucka on Wonder Woman there. Yeah. Because the panty line was a little bit too high for Rucka's tastes on Wonder Woman's panties or whatever. But in any event, I love Frank Cho, and I think he deserves a shout out. I mean, all the themes. I mean, look at that. I mean, just gorgeous stuff, you know. But yeah, bunnies.
Yeah.
But
yeah, again, I mean, he's one that whose line work and whose style is to me instantly recognizable. So yeah, great. That's a great pick. Yeah. All right. Let me take a look at my list here. I think I have a few that I want to mention. Yeah. So In-Hyuk Lee is up and coming. He's kind of burst on the scene, probably starting last year, especially at Marvel. And I think yesterday I mentioned his variant cover on the Immortal She-Hulk. I'll probably pull that up for you. And he's kind of one of these Asian artists. And I guess you'd say like Art Germ was kind of the first one to sort of come on the scene and be really popular. And he's kind of the same vein where he has just a really clean style. I guess it's called the good girl style is what a lot of people would refer to it as. So if you look at his She-Hulk variant, I mean, it's just very, you know, it's very beautiful, soft lines, a lot of curves. So he's definitely on my list. Can you guys, I'm not even sharing it. Hold on. Let me, there we go. So now you can see there's the variant for Immortal She-Hulk number one. So as I said, yeah. Soft lines, you know, soft colors, a lot of curves, definitely a good girl style. So I thought about him. I also thought about Art Germ. I just mentioned for a lot of the same reasons. Mikael Janin, who I actually considered for best artist, but then I looked, I was like, man, he really didn't do that much interior work this year. So maybe next year for some Superman work, but he's still an artist whose style that I really, really enjoy. Mark Brooks is somebody who, you know, like when I think about the covers that I buy, like any cover that Mark Brooks does, unless it's, you know, some 1 in 25 or higher variant that's really expensive, I buy it. Even if I'm not really reading the series, I buy the book because Mark Brooks is doing it. And he was my pick last year. So that's the only reason that I didn't pick him this year. So the person I did pick is also very similar to Mark Brooks, that if he does a cover, I'll buy it. Even if I don't read the series. And this year he did a bunch of covers for Star Wars Bounty Hunters, which I'm, you know, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, but, and I certainly wouldn't have been buying Star Wars Bounty Hunters, except he did the variant cover. So it's my buddy Lieber Mayo. And I couldn't believe that I hadn't picked him for best. I've picked him for best artist before, but never best cover artist. So, so I picked him. Let me show you a few. So I mentioned this yesterday. He did this, Detective this Comics cover, yeah. You know, with the scarred coin, which, yeah. You know, just beautiful. He did a lot of, he was a variant cover artist on Detective for quite a while. Here's another one with Batman looking in through a window, which is very, you know, realistic and grim and gritty. Yeah. I mean, a lot of his, so here's one of the Star Wars Bounty Hunter ones again, you know, cyborg looking face, and his art is just so visceral. And I mean, obviously this didn't figure into my consideration on choosing him, but he does have, because he's also a writer, you know, he's a comic creator. He doesn't just do art, he writes comics as well. He had a couple Suiciders miniseries back in the day, but he's doing a story in the Marvel series over at Marvel that Alex Ross is kind of show running with Silver Surfer. So it didn't come out yet. It doesn't come out till March, but I mean, I just wanted to show that cover because, like, oh my God. And he's writing Silver Surfer. And I think knowing Lee the way I do, this is the perfect kind of character for him to write. So I can't wait to read the story and see the art. Cause I think he's doing the interior artwork as well, but I mean, that cover is just like amazing. So
it is. Yeah. Gorgeous.
Yeah. And I mentioned it yesterday. I just got his art book. His art book just came out last month from DC. If you have a chance to pick it up, I would recommend that as well. Cause it has a lot of his early artwork. That's pretty hard to track down these days. Stuff, you know, he did like on Deadpool and whatnot. Sorry, Deathblow, not Deadpool, Deathblow over at Wildstorm. Those issues, you know, they didn't have high print runs. They weren't exactly flying off the shelf. So some of his early work can be hard to find. And he was saying that he was kind of embarrassed to have early work come out because he wasn't really proud of it. But then he realized the worth of showing his early work so you could see his progression over time. So yeah, Lee is just incredible. And if you ever have a chance to meet him, he's a really great guy too. So he's my pick for best cover artist. All right, up next, what do we have? I think it's my turn to go first now. Best writer. So, and again, this is so, so tough. There's a lot of people that I could choose from. I thought about Ram V based on the strength of his Justice League Dark and his Catwoman run. I mentioned Catwoman yesterday, but it wasn't that many issues of Catwoman. I thought about Vita Ayala, who's done incredible work on Nebula, which only got a few issues last year, but hopefully it's going to pick back up. They also did an Aquaman annual this year, and they also were the current writer on New Mutants, which has been really great. I thought about Carla Pacheco. I mentioned her Spider-Man, or her Spider-Woman rather, series has been really great. Donnie Cates. I can't go wrong picking Donnie Cates. But the thing about Donnie is I love his crossover and I love his baby teeth over at Aftershock, even though it hasn't had an issue for a while. But I'm not reading like King in Black or Thor or Venom, which is what he's, you know, most known for. So I was like, maybe I don't want to pick him. Steve Orlando, I picked his Commanders in Crisis as the best new team. I mentioned Killaman. That was my favorite graphic novel. He also finished up Martian Manhunter this year. He was on Wonder Woman for a good part of the year. So I thought about going with him. Tom Taylor's another one I'm sure is on a lot of your guys' list. You know, Suicide Squad, Seven Secrets is amazing. I'm not caught up on Deceased or Deceased Dead Planet, but I'm going to be reading that eventually. And that's been incredible. But ultimately, and I know I'm going to pick Tom Taylor at some point, it's just a matter of time. But this year I didn't want to overlook Kelly Thompson, who Rocky mentioned yesterday is a very underrated writer and doesn't get enough credit. And I totally agree. And so that's why I picked her as my best writer for 2020, based on the strength of Captain Marvel, which I had as my best ongoing series, and Black Widow, which we've talked about several times being a real surprise and being a really great series this year, with cool Adam Hughes covers. And, you know, Black Widow's always been an interesting enough character, but it's always been spy stuff. You know, I talked about this yesterday, and Kelly's really brought sort of a humanizing touch and a relatable touch to Natasha, giving her a family and whatnot. So I just think she's done incredible work this year. So that's why I gave her my nod for best writer.
Nice choice.
What about you, Rocky?
Well, you mentioned a bunch already. I really liked my runners up. I really liked Al Ewing, his work on Immortal Hulk. And of course, we only see them when they're dead. Robert Kirkman's work on Firepower and Die, Die, Die. I really like that. Donnie Cates. I mean, you got to have him on the list because of just the sheer magnitude of what he's doing at Marvel. He's keeping Marvel afloat in so many ways, along with Kelly Thompson. I love Kelly Thompson. I for some reason, I actually think I should probably give her more credit. I feel kind of bad. She's definitely could be a candidate for certainly the top. But ultimately, when I narrowed down to what was the most entertaining for me consistently, I realized with Chip Zdarsky, with his Daredevil, Spider-Man Life Story, and Stillwater, that's a trifecta there that I just can't ignore. And that just puts him in the number one spot for me overall, Chip Zdarsky, for Stillwater, Daredevil, and Spider-Man Life Story.
Not a bad pick. I think I'm still holding Howard the Duck against him, so that's why I didn't even make my honorable mention. But no, that's a great pick. I'm glad you brought him up because I didn't even think about him. All right, Manny, what about you?
Shoot, what the heck? So I'm gonna go ahead and help you out, Jace, because my pick for best writer, I thought of Tinian for all of the work that he's done. I did think of Ram V. I just didn't necessarily feel like I completed it enough for me to call him my best writer. That's just for a lack of time. It's not because necessarily I didn't want to read it. So I went with kind of same thing like Rocky. Who did I enjoy the most? And for me, it's Tom Taylor with Suicide Squad and Deceased, Dead Planet. It's just fun. It's good. It's different. Deceased gave us the opportunity to see a lot of the young heroes take over the mantle in a setting where it made sense and it wasn't too convoluted or too many Batman, you know? So it told a good story. It had a good side story also with John Constantine. I liked that also. I think Trigon was a little much for me, but I like the idea also of the of some of the villains coming together. So overall, it was just fun. I liked it. I liked that Black Canary had a lantern ring.
Yeah, green.
They were able to bring back Barda, and I thought that was fun. And also just that story. I mean, I'm such a sucker for Canary and Green Arrow that anytime it's presented to me in comic book form, I eat it up. So just overall, I loved it. And then also Suicide Squad, which is what he's been working on also, and wrap that up. That's why the Ted Kord moment was important for me. And then the reveal that it was actually Black Mask, that was fun. And they did the one thing I didn't think they were going to do. They killed Deadshot. Somebody carjacked Batman, which was so much fun. I really liked that moment also. With that being said, I'm really disappointed that Tom Taylor is not either taking over Superman or doing Justice League.
Join the club, man.
I really thought that after Injustice, after all of this, that he was going to be. I mean, if he didn't want to do it, fine. I get that too, because we have our like lineups of what we wish people would do, and then it's like, no, I don't want to do something like that, which is fine. Yeah. But I think Tom Taylor on Justice League or on Superman would be phenomenal.
Well, we do have the biggest disappointment category coming up, so you can keep.
Yeah. Oh no, there's other things to that.
Well, Tom Taylor has gone on record on Twitter saying he would love to write Superman. I've never seen him comment on Justice League. Maybe he wouldn't want to do it because he's done Injustice, and that's kind of Justice League.
I guess, but I mean, just mainline. You know, this is going to be a bread butter. This is going to be the book that leads into something big. I think he's the right guy for it. I think it's the right time for it. But based on some of the things you've told me, I mean, yikes.
Yeah, he's got Nightwing. He's got his Seven Secrets, you need to read Seven Secrets. You're such a Taylor fan. You'll love it. The other thing I'll mention about Taylor, it wasn't on my list because it didn't finish in 2020. In fact, the last issue just came out this last Wednesday, and that was his Hellblazer Rise and Fall series, which is my favorite John Constantine story that I have ever read. Yeah. And it's not close. It is the perfect encapsulation in three gorgeously illustrated by Derek Robertson issues for Black Label. It's a little bloody. It's a little gory. It's a little depraved. It's a little crass. When you add up all those little things, it adds up to a lot of John Constantine. And if I ever have somebody come to me and say, I'm a fan of John Constantine, what should I read? I'm going to point him to this. It's the perfect three issues, or, you know, if you have the collected, the perfect way to introduce somebody to who John Constantine as a character. It's absolutely fantastic. It was so good.
Agreed.
Well, let's move on to our next category. It's best writer artist. Did you have somebody for this category, Manny? Or was this one you?
Yeah, I'm going to cheat.
Okay. Well, we'll let you go first then.
I think she finished up some things over. She didn't necessarily do the art and the inside, but she did a lot of did the covers. But she also had some graphic novels come out, a library edition of one of her books at Dark Horse. I'm picking Joelle Jones.
That's a great pick.
I've had the chance to interview her before for Lady Killers, and that book came out on in a library edition, and her art is stunning, and I love what she did over with Catwoman. I think that's a perfect artist writer combo for that title, and I mean that book Catwoman, that's quite a surprise, because they did that, they switched it over, and now then it went to Ram V. And it was like, wow, I didn't think you were going to be able to top that, but I guess I was wrong. Overall, she's great. And I really enjoy her art. I really enjoy her storytelling. So that's going to be my pick.
All right. That's a good pick. Rocky, who do you have?
This was no contest for me. I mentioned this one already before in a prior category, but Daniel Warren Johnson for Wonder Woman Dead Earth. art is just so viscerally graphic and very gritty line work. And I'm not going to lie, man, if you're picking up Wonder Woman Dead Earth, this is not the Wonder Woman you're accustomed to, and it's not an artistic style. This is not a DC house style by any stretch of the imagination. Daniel Warren Johnson has done previous work for his own creator image, Murder Falcon. So some of you might know him from that series. And but his interpretation of Wonder Woman is much darker. Her and the Amazons play a key role in what leads to a very dark dystopian future. And it is Wonder Woman, Dead Earth. It's four issues long. It's very much a redemption arc for Wonder Woman redeeming herself and the Amazons and basically saving humanity in a dark future. And there's a super, and I said before, there's a Wonder Woman Superman battle that it is by far the greatest battle between Wonder Woman and Superman you'll ever see. Up until this point, the greatest Superman versus Wonder Woman battle was written by Gail Simone in Wonder Woman, following the sacrifice in the sacrifice arc that culminated with Wonder Woman snapping Maxwell Lord's neck. That battle between Wonder Woman and Superman, scripted by Gail Simone, was extremely impressive, the way she utilizes both their power sets. Daniel Warren Johnson here tops it. And it's far more visceral. If you thought Robert Kirkman's Invincible was very graphic and gory, man, pick up issue 3 of this Wonder Woman Dead Earth, Daniel Warren Johnson. He knows how to tell a story, and boy, can he draw it as well.
Great pick. So I had a few that I thought about. Emma Kubert and Rusty Glad on Inkblot has been really good. But they're both just listed as co-creators. And so I don't know who exactly does what. I know they both draw and they both plot the story, but it's unclear. So, but it is worth picking up. I also, here's a blast from the past. Kevin Eastman for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Last Ronin. It was such an incredible book, but we only got one. And then they just keep pushing it out. Why don't you guys just wait until you had all the issues in the canon and release it? And it would have blown up and been one of the biggest success stories of 2020 or 2021, whatever. So I couldn't give it to him based on just one issue, even though it was incredible. Likewise with Steve Scroach, I think that's how you say it. Maybe it's Scroachy, but the Post-Americana, which that's a crazy, you always talk about visceral and bloody and depraved. And it's a great start, but we only had one issue in December. And then issue 2 came out in January. So I couldn't necessarily give it to him on the strength of that. Also, I considered Inaka Miranda, who along with his brother Roy Miranda writes We Live for Aftershock, and Inaka does the art as well. But again, he's doing it with somebody else, and so it wasn't really clear to me. I didn't feel right giving him writer-artist when his brother is pulling half the duties on writing and you know, maybe isn't artistic or what have you. So ultimately, I went with somebody you may have heard of before. His name's Daniel Warren Johnson for Wonder Woman Dead Earth. So Rocky and I fully agree. It's an incredible story. I can't really add much to what he said other than in a way the art is sort of dirty. It is, you know, not that it makes you feel dirty, but it's visceral, but in a different, you know, you always use that word to describe Lee Bermejo's art, because Lee's art looks so tactile. Like you know what Batman's costume looks like when you see it, you know what that would feel like when he has like the wrinkles, whether it's leather or what have you. This is it's kind of scritchy, and Daniel Warren Johnson's art is like scritchy and dirty in a different way. It's not real clean. Like when you look at it, you know, these people have been through some stuff, you know, they look bruised. They look bloody. They look they look, it looks, it's got this lived in look. It's so hard to describe, but as soon as you see it, like, you know, you recognize it's Daniel Warren Johnson, and you'll know exactly kind of what I'm talking about. So that was my pick as well. So best writer artist Daniel Warren Johnson. So let's move on. Best inker. Now this is one that you didn't have anybody for, Rocky.
Well, you know, I'm really embarrassed because I've been reading comic books since I was 7 years old, and I'm 52 years old, and I'm embarrassed to say that I don't know a lot about inkers, and I know it a lot in times in comic books. I mean, I know I can appreciate line work, but I can't always tell. I mean, I can kind of tell when an inker, like if Klaus Janson does somebody's inks, I can tell Klaus Jensen inking a little bit, but I hate to say this, but I want to apologize to all inkers out there, but I just don't know them by name. You know, I don't really have an appreciation for what they do. And I hate to admit that, but it's the truth. And I don't think I ever really have until it's sort of pointed out to me. I've said to you and to Dark Knight, Trevor before that, you know, I probably don't have an appreciation of the language of truly appreciating sometimes the art is perhaps I should.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, when I know when I was younger, I just thought inking meant they just literally went over the lines with ink. And it was kind of like a lot of people think it's just tracing. And it's so much more than that. And I've learned over time from interviewing and talking to inkers and them showing me things that I've, you know, been able to educate myself to know it's so much more than that. And unfortunately, I think it's unfortunate that inking is sort of a dying art, because now so many, with the advent of digital technology, so many artists working digitally, you literally can do that, right? You can draw either a heavier line with a digital pencil, or if you're digitally painting, you just draw with a heavier line. So you're not drawing in pencil where it requires inks, or even if you're drawing and you use a digital pencil, but you're putting down pencil lines, you can just hit a button on your software and it literally inks it for you in terms of just, you know, making those pencil lines thicker and darker. So it's a way for comic companies, especially Marvel and DC, to save money. They don't have to pay a person to ink it. But there's so many times where you'll look at a creator who's been around the industry for a while as a penciler, and you look at what their work used to look like when they had an inker, and you look at their work now and you realize, man, their art looks a lot better with an inker because they clean things up. They add texture. They can change line weights to help with depth and make things clearer, and they can fix anatomy mistakes and things like that. But now, yeah, a lot of times they're going right from the pencils or digital inks that the artist is creating in right to the colorist. And even some of the things that the inkers used to do, now the color artists are picking up. So yeah, it's sort of a lost art. And I think it's to the detriment of the art overall, but that's just, you know, the realities and the economics of comics. So, but I'll go ahead and give my list. Jonathan Glapion's always on my list because he's incredible. I also think Eau Claire Albert and Joe Prado, who has a team ink over Ivan Reis. So, you know, the Superman title, they always do an incredible job. Wherever Ivan is, you know, they're a team. Wherever you see Ivan's art, you'll see Eau Claire Albert and Joe Prado, or just Joe Prado. And they all, I mean, I've never actually seen Ivan Reis in anything published that wasn't inked by them, unless it's some kind of, you know, publisher of just his pencils, which is still really great. But the weight that those guys bring to it, like if you were to look at his pencils, you know, hold up a page of his pencils versus the finished product or just the ink product, you can see exactly the weight that those guys bring to his work, because he has a very fine line. And so it needs that extra oomph. But ultimately, I went with Iber Ferreira, who is the inker, who is the personal inker for Eddie Barrows, who we've mentioned a couple times. Specifically, I picked him for the strength of Freedom Fighters, which we've mentioned several times during the award show, being a really great series. And yeah, his work, Eddie Barrows, I think it's the best artwork. You know, Eddie has done other things, runs on Detective Comics, whatever, but that Freedom Fighters art is the best I've ever seen Eddie Barrows artwork look. Better than Detective, better than Nightwing. And, you know, I credit both Iber Ferreira for the incredible ink work he did, and also Adriana Lucas for the great colors that I mentioned previously. So for me, that he gets my nod as best inker of 2020. Who do you have, Manny?
I kind of in the same boat as Rocky. I had I didn't really have a pick.
All right. Next up, we have best color artist. You first, Rock. Who do you have?
I went with Romulo Fajito Jr. I've loved his coloring. I've always been a big, huge fan of his, predominantly because of his work on Wonder Woman. He does a whole slew of titles, and I couldn't begin to name all of them that he's done for DC. But I know whenever he's coloring something, it just pops off the page. I've done a lot of complaining about the storytelling in Wonder Woman, but one thing that Wonder Woman has always benefited from is that the colors pop off the page. And the art's usually, the interior art's always been usually fairly good in Wonder Woman. And the coloring is, he's the perfect colorist, at least for Wonder Woman, when you need eye-catching, eye-popping colors. And we all know how important that is to have that special sort of shading and the nuance and the difference that coloring can make. I mean, just wow. And he wows me. It's as simple as that. I'm sorry I never did. There's lots of other great, fantastic art that if I looked and maybe scrutinized who the colorist was, I could give a more full answer to this. But I would have fallen back on Romulo Fajardo Jr. So I say that by way of an apology because I don't have any runners up.
He's not a bad pick at all. I mean, I didn't realize how long he'd been around in the industry because I never noticed his coloring work until that Wonder Woman run where he was coloring over Nicola Scott. And, you know, her art has such an innocence to it and he captured that so well. And then I was doing like a Top Cow Chronology episode from, I was covering some comic way back in the 90s and he had colored it. And I had no idea that he had been around for he's been working in comics as a color artist for like over 30 years. So I had no idea he'd been around that long. So
I did not know. I didn't know that myself. I didn't know that.
Yeah. All right, Manny, who do you have?
Brett Anderson. Three Jokers. I mean, yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah. No surprises there. No. But it's also, man, like there's a lot of books that are so good with colors, but I sometimes don't know how to judge it, how to appreciate it specifically because I think some of them are, you know, depending on the genre, they're going to be colored differently or depending on how the rest of the art is. But I just, because of the fact that Fabok's my favorite artist and he's worked with Brad Anderson before and they just click and beautiful teamwork. I have no choice but to pick him as my pick for best colorist. I feel kind of bad, but at the same time, whatever.
No, but, I mean, he's done, and he works, he does a lot of big name books too, for like, you know, DC and such. So yeah, I mean, Action Comics, Batman, Detective, Flash. Didn't he do Doomsday Clock?
Yeah, I think he did. I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Before Watchmen. I mean, yeah, he's a go-to guy for sure. So yeah, it's not, he's on my list. I have three, I have my winner and two honorable mentions. And one of my honorable mentions is Brad Anderson. My other honorable mention is my winner from last year, who's Dave Stewart, specifically for his work on Gideon Falls. I didn't pick Dave again, but that's not because his work on Gideon Falls got any worse. I just wanted to recognize somebody else this year, but I talk all the time about how creepy Dave colors that series. I mean, anytime that you can do daytime scenes and color them and still have them feel creepy, because, you know, so many times when you're talking about creating mood and making things kind of scary or creepy, it's they're at night and you're using dark colors. He can do it with like greens and yellows. So that's a credit to Dave Stewart. But ultimately, because she's on my list every year as an honorable mention, and I always say somebody just edges her out, but she's one of the best colorists in comics, much like Romulo Fajardo Jr. or Brad Anderson. She works on everything, can even name all the books that she works on. And so many people really think that she's the best color artist in comics. So you guys can probably guess where I'm going here. It's Jordi Belair, who actually has done some writing this year. So it's great to see her branching out in her comics career. But yeah, probably long overdue for me to choose her as my best colorist, because she's just amazing. And so I've never had a chance to meet Jordi Belair. And I was at New York Comic Con one year and I was talking to Declan Shelby, and this woman came up and behind his booth, you know, and whispered in his ear and was talking to him real briefly about something. And I wasn't trying to overhear, but I caught a little snippet of the conversation. And I thought, just based on what she said, that I thought, oh, cause I know, I think Declan, I don't know if they were boyfriend, girlfriend or something. So I knew that they had a relationship at one point though. And so when she started to walk away from the table, I was like, excuse me, are you Jordi Belair? And she goes, oh no. Oh my God. I wish. And it turned out it was Triona Farrell, who's also a very, very talented, great color artist. Here's this very accomplished color artist who has done great work and should not feel in the shadow of anybody. And even she was like, no, I wish I was Jordi Belair. That's how good Jordi Belair is. She's like a color artist, right? Action Comics, Amazing Spider-Man.
She colors the new Wonder Woman, right? With Joelle Jones, right? Isn't she the colorist in Wonder Woman, Future State?
Yeah, the Future State Wonder Woman with Yara Flor. The Black Widow series that we've been talking about, which is so incredible. She colors that. So yeah, she's everywhere. She's very prolific, and she's great. And she colors Dark Knight Detective, Future State Dark, or Dark Detective rather, for Future State. So yeah, she's Catwoman, Joker. I mean, she's done it all, and she's just an incredible color artist. So finally, she gets the nod. I'm sure she's finally going to be able to sleep at night. It's probably been keeping her awake that I've never given her the. She's always been, you know, second place runner up. So sleep well, Jordi. You finally have my best color artist award for 2020. So moving on, best new talent. I don't even remember whose turn it is to go first. I'll throw it over to you, Manny. Who do you have for
best? So we talked about this and you gave me the okay to nominate Ram V for best new talent. And more like just finally just, you know, necessarily, I guess arriving on the quote-unquote proverbial big stage.
Yeah, I need to change that from best new talent to breakthrough talent. Makes it.
Breakthrough talent sounds really good. I met Ram V the last Comic-Con thanks to a friend of mine. And was so
it
he
2019? I thought it was 2018.
No, it was 19.
19? Okay.
Yeah, and he gave me issues 1, 2, and 3 of the These Savage Swords, which is a great story that he did. And then, you know, he jumped over and now he did a Swamp Thing annual, he's doing Catwoman, he's working on he also has Justice League Dark. And then the one book that I haven't read but I've heard good things about is Blue and Green. So lots of good stuff and obviously lots to look forward to. And he couldn't be a nicer guy. Very, very happy for him. And I think the future is bright for him. And I think more people need to be paying attention.
Yeah, I think it's a great pick. Yeah, he definitely has a higher profile this year. All right, Rocky, what about you?
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I actually do think Ram V is slightly better than my winner. For some reason, I feel familiar enough with Ram V that I actually feel like I got familiar with him in 2019. So I never, that's the only reason. So I admit Ram V is a better writer than what I'm, a slightly better talent than what the one I'm going to name. But Stephanie Phillips is someone that I think has got a lot of potential. And I read both her series, one from Aftershock, Artemis and the Assassin. I thought it was very inspired idea based on a real life World War II hero, American hero and spy in World War II who helped prevent the plans for the D-Day invasions from falling into Nazi hands, based on a true story. And of course, she had to throw in time traveling with it. Artemis and the Assassin goes back in time to try to kill this American spy. I thought it was a great story. It was like 4 or 5 issues long. She also wrote A Man Among Ye, which was a 4-issue series. And that was before she's currently writing Future State Harley Quinn, which I'm very pleasantly surprised at. Jace, you and I on your podcast here, we're reviewing that along with Trevor. We reviewed that first issue of Future State Harley Quinn, and I thought it was actually pretty good. You know, she's taken Harley in a different direction. She's almost more like a profiler now, with reminiscent of the Joker Harley Criminal Sanity by Cami Garcia that you've sung the praises of, as have I. I think Stephanie Phillips she's still very much at the beginning of her career. She's still young. She's active on Twitter. She just got her hair dyed. She posted it on Twitter. She's young. She's vibrant. She's excited. She's passionate about her job. And you know, she wears her heart and her passion on her sleeve, and it's really her love for comic books is infectious and contagious. And it's hard for me not to name her as best new talent for 2020.
Yeah. So interesting. I've got three people on my list. The first one is Ram V, who's Maddie's pick. Second person on my list is Stephanie Phillips, who's Boom's pick. And so I sort of felt the way that you did, Boom, with Ram V. Like, did he really break through in 2019? Was it 2020 that he broke through? You know, I could have gone either way. And with Stephanie, I felt kind of the opposite. Because, yeah, it's great that she's working on Future State and she's got the regular ongoing Harley Quinn, but all that stuff's in 2021. So has she done enough yet? I feel like maybe she'd be my pick for next year. So
good point.
I think they're both great picks. Obviously I thought enough of them to put them on my list for honorable mentions, but ultimately I went with somebody who maybe he's been on other people's radar before this year. But for me, this is when I started taking notice. He's a cover artist. His name is Shannon Mayer and his work is unbelievable. It is so amazing. He draws women and they're just beautiful women. They're not like out of proportion and overly sexualized, whatever. They just
not 90s Witchblade women.
No, they're oh. Dude. So
just okay. Kidding.
I'm going to put it this way. So I have never thought Gamora was very attractive, not in the comics. I mean, she's got green skin.
You know, dig the green.
Even when Jim Starlin, who's a fantastic artist, one of my favorite all-time artists, draw Gamora. Never thought.
You don't like green skin?
Gamora looks good, right? No, because I like She-Hulk fine, but I've never thought Gamora was attractive. Then you even take Gamora in live action. I'm not a fan of Zoe Saldana in terms of her looks. She's a fine actress, whatever, but you know, they're particularly attractive. So I thought when I saw this Guardians of the Galaxy cover, I was like, all right, well, if this guy can make Gamora look good, he's doing something right. I mean, look at that. That is just incredible.
Yeah. Gamora's design is gorgeous, bro. I'm very upset.
That is very nice. Yeah, very sexy.
That is a very good cover.
And then, so I was going through, and so when I was actually looking for best covers of the year, I came across this, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's that Shannon Mayer guy. I've heard the name this year. And he's done, again, just cover after cover after cover that has been spectacular. But when I was going through them, this one, like literally, I said out loud, holy crap, when I saw it. It's actually from 2019. But look at that cover. Ooh, so woo, X-Men number two with X-23. And I was like, oh, my God, like this guy. And so then I went and started doing a little bit of research because I saw the name Shannon Mayer. I remembered the name. I didn't even know, was this a guy? Is this a girl? I didn't know. So I went and looked the artist up, and turns out, yeah, it's a guy. His art is absolutely incredible. Mostly draws females, but has other covers as well. But yeah, I just thought, wow, it is a name that I've heard this year for the first time. And so based on, you know, the strength of all the amazing covers that I saw, I went ahead and gave him my best new talent. And I don't know, Rocky, you're kind of over in the spec corner. Are his covers hot? Have you heard of him before?
I have heard of him. And he is, some of his covers are on, I know, Key Collector app. I got the Key Collector app and Cover Price I think he's still under the radar, to be quite blunt. But he's definitely, he's mentioned there. And all he needs to do is hit a couple of those key issues, and you can tell by his style that he's, you know, he's got a future ahead of him for sure. And I actually am jealous a little bit. I would love to see him. Oh, I love that Catwoman cover. That's actually, yeah, that's gorgeous.
His punchline cover is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's somebody that, that's what I love about this category. You can pull somebody out that, hey, yeah, I remember hearing this guy's name. Let's go take a look. And yeah, he's right on the verge. If he's not, you know, like, here's your chance, listeners. This guy could be the next Art Germ, you know, in terms of popularity.
True, yeah.
Yeah,
Scott Campbell.
There's his punchline cover.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. So he gets my nod. So he'll probably sleep better at night too, knowing that
good choice. Good choice.
You got me. All right. I think it's my turn to go first. Let's move on to the next category. It's most underrated book. And I'll rattle off my my honorable mentions, and I don't need to go into detail on any of my honorable mentions because I've already talked about them, or they've won other. I've given them the nod in other categories. Spider-Woman by Carla Pacheco, Miles to Go, which was my sleeper, by B. Clay Moore and Stephen Molnar. Captain Marvel, which even though it's a known Marvel book, I don't think enough people read it. I think it's maybe suffers a little bit from the, oh, it's a female lead, I don't need to read that. Captain Marvel's a great book. You should be reading it. But ultimately, I gave it to Other History of the DC Universe, which Manny had as his kind of sleeper, because, you know, both of us feel like not enough people are reading it. And that's kind of why I put it here as my most underrated book. I just think it's such a landmark. It's such a seminal work, and it's an evergreen work. This is going to be one of those series at DC, like Watchmen, like Killing Joke, like Frank Miller's Return of the Dark Knight. I guarantee you the Other History of the DC Universe in collected edition with all the reprint that's going to collect all three of the Black Label issues, it will always, as long as DC Comics exists, this will always be in print. It will always be in print. It is that important. It is that relevant. It is that good in terms of the narrative, the story, the art, the package, the whole thing. It's just incredible. If you haven't read it, then you need to go pick it up digitally, check it out. You know, it's not yet on the DC Infinite app or whatever it's called. It used to be the DC streaming service, but it'll be on there soon. When it shows up, read it. It's absolutely outstanding. So that's my pick for most underrated book. What about you, Rocky? What do you have?
You have taken the high ground and you have educated your viewers, and I am going to go the exact opposite direction. And I chose Scumbag by Rick Remender.
As soon as you said that, as soon as you said exactly,
Scumbag,
I'm like, I have the most depraved book I can think of.
Scumbag. This Scumbag, you know what? I can only hope that Scumbag becomes a greenback and matches Other History of the DC Universe in the years to follow, because it is about a piece of human garbage, a drug addict, a lowlife, a person who swears, who's got no redeeming value, a narcissist, a prick, a complete a-hole in every conceivable area of his life. And he ultimately gets embroiled in a super spy James Bond scenario where his blood gets infused with nanites and he gets strange kind of superpowers. And he naturally, this scumbag's got to save us from tyranny. And I mean, it's funny. It's humorous. It's poking fun at, it's taking the worst tendencies right now. 2020 sucked, people. We had the pandemic, we had everything. And so with so many people, there's something just cathartic about reading Scumbag, because he's someone who, I mean, how many of us haven't felt just like saying to 2020, and sometimes just screw this, screw that. I am sick and tired of this and that. This guy's got no morals. He says what he feels. He's a piece of human garbage. He exemplifies our worst tendencies. And sometimes it's cathartic to just read a character like that and live your life through him and say, geez, I'd like to be an asshole like that. I love Scumbag. It did come out just at the tail end of 2020. It's on issue. I think it's on issue 3 now. I just read. I might stand to be corrected on that. I think it's issue 3. I'm loving it. It's underrated. I don't know why. It's got variant covers that are hilarious, that look like a B movie covers. This just, to me, this is a Quentin Tarantino movie just waiting to be made. That's my dream. But anyways, that's my most underrated comic book for 2020.
So I'm reading this. And I picked it up, and I didn't want to like it because he is so depraved. I'm sucked in because it's so good. And I love how you mentioned, you know, you read it and so many of us would like to say the things that he says. I kind of take it the other way, and it makes me feel better about myself because I'm such a better person than this guy, because he's such a piece of crap that I take it the other way. But I also love this kind of original Star Wars movie poster parody cover. That's a great pick. And I like the series despite I don't want to like it as much as I do, But Rick Remender is doing an incredible job. And the Louis LaRosa covers, and Louis LaRosa is doing some of the interior artwork too, but you know, he's not the fastest artist. So we're getting some other artists to fill in as well. But all right, Manny, what do you have up next?
Jesus. So one of you took the high road. Another one took the scumbag. I'm just going to take it out to the high seas with A Man Among Ye by Stephanie Phillips. And it doesn't surprise me that I'm picking a Top Cow book as underrated or just it needs a little bit more attention just because they're always putting out such quality work. And you guys have already talked so much about Stephanie Phillips. I don't think that we need to elaborate any more on that. But this one's with artist Craig Surmark. And so, I mean, they're bringing to life the tale of Anne Bonny and Mary Read. And it's just them going on a pirate adventure. And what I like about it is that, yeah, it's a female pirate, but they don't shove that idea or that theme of feminism down your throat. It's just a good story with a good bunch of characters during the time of pirates. And I was very sad when it's just a 4-issue miniseries, but at the end of the book they say that they may come back for more. But I mean, if Stephanie Phillips blows up the way everybody thinks she's going to, it might not happen. But still, it's a more talent again that's worked so well with Top Cow. So always kudos to them for finding so much good talent. I mean, Brian Edward Hill was there. Isaac Goodhart. I mean, we know about some of the artists that pass through there that do phenomenal work. So yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and that's my pick.
Yeah, they really are a talent farm. It's too bad they get poached. David Finch started there. Laura Braga. You know, this goes on and on. But you're right. But I will say this. You know, Stephanie's going to, even if she does blow up, Stephanie's going to do what Stephanie wants to do. And she loves history. Her dad's a history professor. So it wouldn't surprise me to see her come back for another 4 issues. And that'd be
great.
Yeah. And I know Rock read this too and really enjoyed it.
Yeah. No, it was really good. I like the ending of A Man Among Ye. Yeah. It ended kind of somewhat on a cliffhanger because it has the main character, female pirate there, swearing to kill her arch nemesis. And then the arch nemesis swearing to kill her. And you just, you know, it definitely ended. It sort of whets my appetite. And unfortunately, it might be a while if she has success at DC. It might be a while before she can get back into a sequel to A Man Among Ye. But we shall see.
Yeah, definitely hope that we find it. So, all right. I don't remember who. I think it's my turn to go first. And I know I'm probably going to steal this one from Manny, but only one. So it's biggest disappointment of 2020. So one's a comic and one is more real life, and it's kind of tough. I'm going to go with the comic, but I easily could give it a tie or even swing the other way. But just the fact there were no cons this year was a disappointment, but at the same time, it was necessary. And I don't begrudge anybody. I'm not mad about it. I'm not, you know, I don't think con should be coming back in 2021, at least the way the numbers look.
You could still be mad about it and, you know, still be okay with it.
No, I mean, I'm disappointed and not because I'm mad at anybody or disappointed in the decisions that were made. I think all the right decisions were made. I'm just disappointed that it was necessary to not have cons, and mostly disappointed I didn't get to see all my friends, all my creators, all the, you know, the other press people that work in the industry and just get to share in the, you know, good times of going to conventions and kind of sharing my joy of comics with all these other fans and the crazy hijinks we get into at the after parties and,
oh my God,
you know, staying downtown in the gas lamp district in San Diego, for Comic-Con, yeah. And the crazy costumes we see and, you know, even the smaller shows that we go to where we get a chance to, you know, maybe get a little more one-on-one time or meet new creators we haven't met before, see the costumes, you know, have our hotel room booked for the wrong weekend and have to sleep in the car. I mean, story, hanging out with creators in the bars after hours and playing trivia games and drinking and just, you know, so many fun times of making friends and things. So that was really, really tough. But ultimately, it pales in comparison to how terribly disappointed I was after waiting years to read Batman Three Jokers. And I'm not even talking about the fact that it started the Joker. I knew it was going to start the Joker, but never got an explanation for why there were three Jokers, at least not one that satisfied me. And it didn't feel like the big event that it was supposed to. It didn't tie into the Batman on the Metron, or the Mobius chair, rather, being taken aback by this. It just didn't make any sense. It failed for me on so many levels. And it's not, and you know, it's not that I think Geoff Johns a bad creator or Jason Fabok's a bad artist. It took too long to come out, and it didn't do what it was supposed to do. And I wouldn't have been disappointed if it hadn't taken so long, because in my mind, it took so long that I thought, well, this is going to be something epic. And I know that's on me for having expectations and for those expectations building over time, but you just can't help but think, man, when somebody keeps saying this is going to be awesome, it's going to be awesome, we're taking our time, we're going to make it great, I expect it to be great. You know, I remember being at New York Comic Con in 2018 and seeing pages, you know, going to a Batman three, or I think it was just a Batman panel, but Fabok was there and Geoff Johns were on stage and they were showing pictures and talking about how, you know, transformative it was going to be. And it just wasn't, And so I'm not trying to call anybody out, but just for me, it was reading that first issue was a huge disappointment. So yeah, that's my pick. So I'll throw it over to you, Manny. I'm guessing yours is the same, but maybe not. I don't know.
So yeah, my biggest disappointment is COVID, is because, I mean, there's so much that it just took away from us for the reasons being. Yeah. And I mean, the many adventures of Jason Manny at conventions never fail. There's never fails to be a dull moment. It's the reason why I drink so much now. I drink so many old fashions, because it's like I'm gonna disclose this. Even my girlfriend's like, oh, you miss Jace, huh? Sometimes when I'm making an old fashioned, because I've told her so many times the stories. I was like, yeah, Jace at the hotel room would always, you know, we always get an orange.
Make an old fashioned.
He always forgets the orange though. I don't know what it is, but he forgets the orange. And we gotta go get the damn orange. And then I was like, yeah, we have like bad sandwiches like during the day, but hey, it gets us through it. But I was like, but the best part is there's always vodka in our sodas. So we're going through the convention all day drinking sodas with vodka in them, because that's the way to do it. And then, I mean, just our bags being dummy heavy. And then sometimes not even like, I didn't even see. It's like we like ping pong, like see each other here and there, and just do this, and then meet up and move around, and then the bars and the dinners, and yeah, all of it's just so much fun, and yeah, we didn't get none of that.
Yeah, depending on where the convention is, sometimes we get to go to my. I work for a restaurant group, so sometimes we get to, if one of my restaurants is close, we get to go have a, you know, $300 dinner, and it doesn't cost us anything. And
yeah, man. Yeah. So just overall, just missing seeing people. And I think that's the biggest thing, is I contacting people and then you see them in Zoom because they're in press rooms and stuff. And they're just like, how you doing? And you're just like, damn, man.
Yeah.
That's fun. I will say though, it's easier on the wallet, but.
Oh yeah.
I have picked up a couple of key issues this last year though, that probably wouldn't have picked up before because of the fact that I've saved a little bit of money. As far as comic book related, let's just put DC in general. I mean, do you remember them firing everybody? That was fun. And then there was three Jokers. There's Death Metal. There's all of that. And then the new lineup of books that we started finding out about Future State, what's going on, what was going to happen. The firing of Dan Didio. I mean, that was huge for me, because I didn't see that coming. We just had seen him at Long Beach.
Yeah.
And they're talking with him and they're giving the state and doing the report. And then next thing you know, he's out. So, you know, there's just so much there for DC and so much disappointment. That, you know, even their TV shows are merging with HBO. So DC Universe is going to die, which it kind of did. Now it's a comic book reader, which is what we thought it would be. There's always hope, obviously, that something's going to go right. But right now, I have nothing necessarily that I'm very excited for. I do not like the lineup for Justice League. I do not like the creative team for, I think it's the artist more than anything for, the artist, let's clarify, the artist for Harley Quinn. And they're going to be focusing on another Mr. Miracle, which I'm like, you can have that. That's not my Mr. Miracle, kind of. And so I don't know, man. It's gonna be weird. I think it's something that we've talked about like yesterday. Was it's gonna be a big year for independence, and I think that's where I'm gonna be focusing my attention: independence, and books like that. And hopefully, actually, I might turn over and start seeing if maybe I can pick up some more decent Marvel books.
Yeah, you can't put Future State on the 2020 tab, though. That's part of the reason we need to do this sooner toward the end of the year. But I tell you what, Future State right now is leading my race for for the biggest disappointment of 2021. But
is it
only,
stories, or is it because all the artwork seems rushed?
It's both.
Oh, okay.
All right, well, Rocky, what do you have, biggest disappointment of 2020?
Well, you guys mentioned one, obviously, the lack of cons. I live in Medicine Hat, Alberta, and so I usually go to the Calgary Comic-Con every year, Edmonton Comic-Con. And in October of 2019, I was lucky enough to go to my first ever New York Comic-Con. Trevor, Dark Knight Nation, invited me, and I was we were certainly planning. I was looking forward to possibly going to New York again in 2020, which is definitely not wasn't going to happen. Even if the con was going to take place, my wife would not let me go anywhere near New York City. So that was a disappointment, obviously. In terms of other sort of miscellaneous disappointments in the comic book sphere, and this might have been an afterflow from 2019, but I was actually, for the first time in my 4 decades of collecting comic books, I was hoping to get into X-Men after House of X and Powers of X, but all it did was reset the status quo. And I was disappointed I couldn't really get into X-Men in 2020. So that was a disappointment for me, because I still felt it is just as inaccessible as it's always been, if not a little bit more so. I thought it was going to simplify the line, not make it 1,000 times more complicated in my mind, even though I do find the elements of it interesting. I was disappointed in Wonder Woman 1984. I did multiple reviews on this. I know what it was trying to do, but I was still ultimately, I thought it could have been better. I was very disappointed that that Mark Waid's not writing Superman, man. Not writing Superman. I'm sorry, but I'm so disappointed in DC with them. I don't mind them laying off if you want to lay off a 30-year editorial staff, if you want to trim some fat, that's fine. But they cut off the beef and the meat and some of the tenderloin too. They got rid of some, and they've replaced it with new talent that we hope is good, but they literally got rid of an extraordinary amount of talent that, unless we're going to get a surprise in the next 6 months here, and it doesn't look like we are, they actually did get rid of top tier talent. And I am frankly disappointed and astonished. And again, Mark Waid not being on Superman rips me apart. Finally, my biggest disappointment was hands down death metal. Ruined DC Comics for me. Yeah. It embodies, I've done videos on this. I won't regale. I'll try to keep it short, but death metal for me embodied absolutely all the worst traits, every criticism of comic books and big events that you could embody over the last 25 years. Mm-hmm. is literally exemplified in death metal. Terrible storytelling, confusing, atrocious, awful, catering to the lowest common denominator, variant covers, overpriced, lack of focus on, not character driven, completely plot driven to the extent that you could say it even had a plot. Ended terribly, bastardized Superman, bastardized Batman, bastardized Wonder Woman. I didn't like the it started off right with Wonder Woman getting some glare, some sunlight by killing Batman Who Laughs. Of course, it's Batman Who Laughs, so of course he didn't die. He become Dr. Bad Hatton. It bastardized Watchmen. It bastardized Doomsday Clock. And nobody knows what the hell's going on in the DC universe. Joshua Williamson just did a review for another podcast where he seems to be surprised that people are wondering if there's still continuity in the DC universe. He doesn't know where they got that idea from. Well, Joshua Williamson, let me tell you, we've been trying to read your comic books and we've been reading DC comics, and don't insult us by saying something so stupid. And I say that with great respect. It's extremely disappointing. DC has to get better in 2021. And I guess I'm ending a little bit harsh there, but this really bothers me because I'm a DC guy my whole life. And when I see them bottom out like this, if it wasn't for Tom Taylor with his deceased and Tom Taylor for DC this year, DC would have been almost a whitewash for me. And well, fortunately there was Black Label, and there was, you know, with the Joker, Harley, Criminal Sanity, and the Black Label line and the Joe Hill line of comics, which were, you know, related to DC. I mean, that saved it for me. But the mainstream DC line, but for Tom Taylor's work. And again, Jace, you mentioned the Hellblazer Rise and Fall, great series. And of course, Wonder Woman Dead Earth, but they're outside the mainstream. DC mainstream comics were such a disappointment, flowing off of Year of the Villain into the atrocious death metal. I'll stop talking now.
No, go ahead. Keep testify.
Well, I don't want to, you know, I want to be positive. I love comic books, but I mean, there was definitely a disappointment there.
Well, we might touch on some of these things. Well, if we move on to the next category, which is biggest comic story of 2020, which not a story in a comic, but an actual news story about the industry. Yeah. So what do you have, Manny?
Oh, that's my bad. Sorry. Did you say Manny or?
Yeah, Manny.
Oh, for me, I mean, if I'm going to take a positive note about the biggest story, it's not the biggest story. I guess it was the firing for DC, which I mentioned earlier, which I should have saved because that's actually what I had on my list for this. And that was a disappointment. They put Jim Lee front and center like the next day to try to explain everything, what's going on, because hey, Jim, put him out there and he's gonna tell everybody that everything's okay. And then you know, we started hearing about Future State and all those plans. And I think from the beginning when that was announced, that it was gonna be a 2-month thing and trying to figure out where everything fits. We were all already weary about it because it's like, it doesn't make any sense.
Some of us were weary 2 years ago,
right?
On this very podcast,
5G, yeah,
said AT&T buying Warner Brothers is going to be a disaster,
and it has been. So,
I said that 2 years,
and it continues because Bendis still has power. So at least quick comment, I forgot that we had anticipated that maybe Mark Waid would be on Superman, and that makes me really sad. But in a positive note, one of the big stories I think that I found a good coming out of DC was the return of Milestone Comics with some of those guys. And I hope that they get the proper platform and that they get to tell the stories the way they want to, because I'm very interested in learning about more about those characters and seeing that kind of story that more, and I'm more excited about those books really than any of the mainline DC books that I have going forward.
All right. What about you, Boom? Biggest comic news story of 2020?
I don't think anything was, I don't think anything comes close to the firing of Dan Didio.
True.
I mean that, and I say that not only because, and I'm sure Jace, you'll have comments on this as well, because Manny already alluded to it, but I think historically, people, future comic book historians will look back into, I think it was January of 2020, as a significant turning point in the history of comic books, because there was a decided shift in the editorial approach toward comic books at DC. And it's when DC started to focus on trying to be number one, as opposed to being comfortable being number two and just telling good stories. The moment the new 50, Rob Liefeld said it best in his pod, and he's got Rob Servations in his podcast. Rob Liefeld, he has got a theory, and I think he's right. He said, Rob Liefeld once talked to, when he started working for DC, he said, Paul Levitz said to him that Paul Levitz always loved being in second place because there was no pressure. They could just sit back and there was no expectation. They could just sit back and do whatever they wanted and make good comics and they could experiment. The moment the new 52 came along, and for those 3 or 4 months, DC had the taste of glory and they were number one. They never looked back, and they had to, and then they bottomed out. Then they had to rebirth, and then they had to stay number one. And then they got noticed by AT&T. AT&T buys them. And then, of course, they got to stay number one in those expectations. And then corporate is just looking at the numbers and the big bucks. And then all of a sudden, it's the company of Batman and only Batman. And it looks like it's going to be the only Batman for the foreseeable future. There's a decided shift. It feels differently. And we know it as collectors. There's a decided shift in the tone and the feel of the comics, and in the type of conversations we're having, this type of criticisms we're having of the work seems to be sort of, you could almost duplicate the criticism from comic to comic. And many times it feels the same. Again, I am guilty of overgeneralizing this, but it all flows back to Dan Didio. And look, I wanted Didio to be fired 15 years ago. Okay. I mean, to me, this is like a hockey team. I mean, sometimes the coach might be a nice guy. It might not even be the coach's fault, but you change the coach when a team sucks, even if it's not the coach's fault. You do that. Look at sports. I think comic publishing should be the same way. You don't leave somebody in just because. But in any event, Dan Didio represented an attitude. He represented a way to approach comics, and he represented sort of the uncomfortable but necessary middle ground that maybe I admit I didn't appreciate until he was gone. I'm happy to eat my words. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe we needed somebody like Didio that could allow a certain amount of creative freedom while at the same time being an asshole from time to time. Now that he's gone and it's corporate making the decisions, I'm starting to look back and second guess all what I thought I knew. And that's all I got to say about that, in the immortal words of Forrest Gump.
So it is so interesting, because I've heard this over and over from so many different people who were calling for Didio to be gone. You know, just looking at it from a different perspective, which I, again, you know, not to toot my own horn, but these are the things I was saying all along about Didio. Like, hey, don't be careful what you wish for, because you might not realize. And I think that stems from knowing Dan, you know, on a personal level. And knowing how much he loves comics and how passionate, how he would always, no matter what, no matter whose fault it was, whether it was the writer, the artist, somebody in editorial, somebody higher up, if there was a mistake made or something, that there was fan backlash, Dan always stood up and said, I made that decision, whether he did or not, because he saw that as his job. So Wally West gets killed, that was my fault. You know, Nightwing, we're going to kill Dick Grayson. There's a rumor. Yeah, that's my idea. He always stood up because he and took the heat, because he felt like that was his job. And he was always the first one to step back and give credit when something went right to other people. So that was his job. That's what a publisher, editor in chief should do. And he did it great for many, many years. That being said, his firing is not my biggest news story. And I have my reasons for that, and I'll talk about that in a second. But I do want to mention a couple other really big things that I think are important to acknowledge in 2020. First of all, Diamond shutting down for the middle of the year because of the pandemic. Again, I don't begrudge them that decision. It may have been the right decision for them in terms of health for their employees, and so that's great. But it didn't send shockwaves through the industry when retailers that are trying to stay afloat can't get their books. You know, it leads to publishers telling their creators, hey, pencils down, because we can't sell any books. We can't make any money. We can't pay you. You're impacting a lot of different people. It gave DC, and their agreement was already possibly going to be up. I'm not clear on that. I've gotten conflicting reports. But regardless, whether their deal was about to be up or not, it did allow them to basically, Diamond, hey, we have a clause in our contract that says if you're not shipping our books, we can get out of our agreement with you, our exclusive agreement. So DC's now out on their own distributing comics through somebody else. That's huge for the industry. That's a big, big news story that we may not have finished seeing the repercussions of yet. And also just how well the comic industry did as a whole, despite all the hiccups, despite all the challenges of 2020. You know, this for me was one of the best years ever in terms of story. You can just hear how many honorable mentions I have. Oh my God, independent comics going crazy with such great content. So I find that to be really good. I know a lot of retailers that had some of their best years. Obviously, it was tougher. They were doing mail order and doing different things. People had some people, you know, those of us lucky enough to still have a job. And I my heart goes out to those that suffered unemployment. But a lot of us, hey, I didn't have to spend gas to get to work every day. I wasn't buying my lunch, you know, every day. And so I had more money to spend on comics and back issues and, you know, trades and all kinds of stuff. And there's retailers that had their highest sales ever this year for things like this. So that's important to acknowledge. You know, so many people, hey, the comic industry is dying. Hey, guess what? Not the case. Not to say every store survived. Some didn't have an online presence. Some just couldn't make it. And again, it's tough. We never want anybody to lose their job or lose their livelihood or their business. But, you know, it was in some ways a house of cards. And I feel like we can come out of this on the other side with a stronger foundation, you know, having learned these lessons and come out with a better industry overall. And a lot of these things that I'm talking about here, go listen to my interview I did recently with Chris Arendt, the senior editor over at Newsarama, who I consider an expert on the comic industry and sales and that kind of thing. And we talk about a lot of this stuff. But ultimately my biggest story was the DC layoffs. Because we can talk about Dan being fired, and yes, that was a big story. But even when I talked to Dan recently, he said even he felt like maybe it was time for him to go, not because he couldn't do the job anymore, but he felt like in terms of the ideas he was coming up with and sort of creatively, he felt like maybe he was starting to repeat himself. And that for him is a clear sign that maybe it was time for him to go. So I don't think him leaving, obviously it impacted, but it didn't have to have as big of an impact as it did, because Dan had been there so long, and Rocky kind of alluded to this, that he had established a culture there, a certain way of doing things, that even if he leaves, if it's still his team in place, think of it like, you know, to use Rocky's analogy, a coach of a team who has taught that team a certain way of playing and winning and doing the job. And even if that coach, you know, suffers a heart attack or he's sick and he can't be and show up for a particular game, the team still knows the way to do it. They still know the Dan Didio way. And if DC hadn't had this massive round of layoffs and laying off, you know, over a third of their editorial staff and tons of support staff, eliminating some departments wholesale, you still would have people over there remembering the lessons, remembering the mentorship, remembering the way that Dan ran the ship, the way that Dan told them to do things. And I don't think we'd have such a sharp decline in quality. The fact that Dan is not there to be a kind of a buffer between the corporate side, AT&T giving, you know, Pamela Lyford all the power and her not even being a fan of comic books, never having read one as far as I know. And now she's just calling shots about a business that she doesn't understand. And it's all about the dollars and cents. That's a problem. And that's why we're seeing the kind of lack of quality in my mind at DC. So while I agree with a lot of what Rocky said, one thing I will say is I don't know that I would necessarily talk about this as the turning point, Dan Didio being fired. To me, it goes back to the corporatization of these publishers. Cause you're right. I know Paul Levitz, and Paul did 100% say that, hey, no pressure, tell the stories you want to tell. We're number two. In my mind, that all changed when the MCU movies made billions of dollars. And that's when corporate America went, oh, these comic book characters, these comic book ideas have value. I've gone on record before as saying that I think overall the success of the movies and comic book characters and IPs being at the center of pop culture is a net negative for the comic industry itself. And I know I've had debates on it. People argue with me till they're blue in the face. But when you look at sales and you look at the lack of freedom creators have now at the big two, I'm happy to debate anybody, because there's more eyes, because now there's billions of dollars at stake. And I get it. if you're a stakeholder in this company, if you're a C-level executive at the company, you want to protect your billion-dollar property. And you're not just going to let the creators get in there and tell whatever stories they want to tell. So again, we've, you know, said it multiple times in this podcast. That's why creators, the best creators, they're going to go over to independent. They're going to go to creator own, where they have the freedom to tell the story they want to tell, rather than having a great idea and being told, no, you can't do that because we might not sell as many Batman pajamas. No, you can't do that because we have a Harley Quinn movie coming out. And if you do that, it completely contradicts the plot line of that story. In my mind, business decisions and creative decisions are almost always diametrically opposed. If they line up, it is only coincidence. And these comic companies, Marvel and DC, their decision-making is 100% corporate driven now. And I don't expect that to change anytime soon, unless one of us wins a billion-dollar lottery and can somehow pry away some of these IPs from the companies.
I'm going to add something to what you said that I never mentioned, and that is the rise of the speculation market. The comic book speculation market, as a byproduct, a net positive of all the corporateness and the movies and the Star Wars and the pop culture, it's really elevated the comic book spec market. So did the pandemic. People are having more money, like you alluded to, Jace. The comic book speculation market really took off in 2020. And while that was not one particular news article, or It was the news every single month through 2020, especially after the pandemic hit. And I think the speculation market, we got two major significant apps. We got retailers more aware of the value of comics than ever before. We're experiencing having to pay. If you don't have a pull list, you're paying $20 for at least one key issue that came out last week because you missed it. And the rise of the Key Collector app, the rise of CoverPrice.com, the rise of eBay sales, all with comic books on the speculation market, is definitely a phenomenon in 2020.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the thing about the spec market, though, is, man, it doesn't have to be a good story. When it's old school guys like us,
that in itself is a story.
Yeah. And so that's, I mean, it's fine. I've always said, and Manny and I have even done episodes, different ways to collect. It's 100% valid to collect the things that you think are going to make you money, or certain covers or certain characters or first appearances. Collect how you want to collect. Live and let live, I say. But that's one thing. Just because something's hot in spec doesn't mean, I mean, I like to see things hot because it's a good story, because I'm a story guy. Anyway, let's move on to hopefully more positive note as we end up here. Most anticipated moment or upcoming series in 2021. And I guess I'll go first. So last year I chose Bad Idea, our friend Dinesh Shamdasani's company, that was supposed to start publishing in 2020. And, you know, Manny and I had dinner with Dinesh and some other creators. I guess it was 2018. WonderCon.
WonderCon, yeah.
Yeah. And learned a lot about Bad Idea, and we're super excited about it.
With the pandemic.
I know. and the infamous Joshua Dysart San Diego Comic-Con getting in a fight with the bouncer story. But it didn't end up happening in 2020. It got pushed back to 2021. So it's on my list again as honorable mention, but I didn't want to pick it for the second year in a row. Also Radiant Black from Kyle Higgins. Going to have a huge launch, over 70,000 pre-orders. When you hear this episode, it comes out this coming Wednesday, so in about 2 or 3 days. So you definitely, if you have not ordered it, you better be there when your comic shop opens, or call them right now and tell them to put aside a copy, because it's going to be one of those books that's going for $20, because it's going to be a hot ticket. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the return of conventions, but I don't even know if that's going to happen in 2020, like we were talking about with the way the numbers look. Maybe November. Maybe late October, maybe in New York Comic Con. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I know C2E2 is already rescheduled for December, so that's a possibility. Just because I'm such a big Superman fan, the Superman Blue and Red anthology series might give us a shot in the arm, even though we're not getting Mark Waid on the regular Superman title or Action Comics. Maybe we can get some good Superman stories there. It's been a long time since I've had good new Superman stories, since Bendis has been writing the Superman books. So it's been tough, but ultimately, the thing I'm looking forward to the most, from my boy Jeff Johns with art by Gary Frank, just like I was just talking about, even big name creators going over to the world of independent, total creator control, total ownership, if it blows up, if it becomes the next Walking Dead TV show, if it turns into a big multi-billion dollar movie, they reap a lot more of the rewards. There's an Image series coming this year from Jeff Johns and Gary Frank called Geiger. And I think that that's going to be the biggest one. I probably would have put the Return of Cons if I was confident they would return this year for all the reasons that Manny and I were talking about earlier. But I just don't know that they're going to come back. So I'm going with Geiger because I think it's going to be, you know, whether or not I particularly enjoy it or not, I think it's going to end up being a huge story. And that could be the seismic shift. That could be the thing that we look back on 20 or 30 years and there's a new age of comics, you know, kind of like when people look at, what is it? Showcase 4 with the new Flash with Barry Allen Flash being the key when the Silver Age started, when things shifted. This could be the end of a comic era with Jeff Johns and Gary Frank releasing Geiger. People could point to the date of their release and say, that's when the independent age started and Marvel and DC. I you know, it's not out of the realm. I don't think it'll happen this year, but it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for Image to pass DC and maybe even Marvel someday. I mean, certainly won't pass Marvel this year, but I could see Image. I don't necessarily think it will, but I could see Image passing DC in the next couple of years, especially if DC keeps going the way they're going. And Geiger could be that big book that everybody says, hey, remember when? So that's my most anticipated series or moment of 2021. What about you, Rocky?
Truthfully, I just can't give any false expectations of excitement here. Nothing really stands out to me as something to look forward to. If I'm brutally honest, I've got very small things.
Looking forward to your next drink.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm mildly interested in I'm interested in the Crime Syndicate series, but the creative team, I'm not really familiar with Andy Schmidt and Kieran McCowan. I'm not really familiar with. You got me excited with your interview and when you talked about Radiant Black. I love the idea of the Superman Blue Red anthology. I'm curious about Nocturna. I'll start reading that by Scott Snyder. I heard good things. Geiger, certainly I'll check that out. The one thing though that I'm wondering, you talk about that Geiger might be a game changer. I'm wondering if Berserker is not going to be a game changer with Keanu Reeves, because I am absolutely stunned that more movie stars haven't done what Keanu Reeves has done. And I think that's with IDW.
Boom Studios.
Right, Boom Studios. They did the Boom Studios publisher. He did an interview with Simple Man's Comics, and he talked about how excited and passionate Keanu Reeves was talking about, you know, and I want his fist to go through the guy's chest and I want it to explode. And he had this image and he's just crazy excited about it. And of course, the pre-sales on Berserker apparently are crazy. It's setting records.
Yeah, it's over 100,000.
Yeah, and I'm actually wondering if that, just like the Geiger impact, will... Just like that, the Geiger impact might have more big names move away from the big two. I wonder if we're going to see more movie stars pull a Keanu Reeves and maybe try to get into comic books and promote comic books. I mean, wouldn't that be great to see?
Yeah, it's a good point. And man, I was trying to collect a lot of the different Berserker covers. There's so many great covers, but then they just exploded. And they even have a 1 of 1,000 cover by John Boy Myers. There's no way I can afford that. So I got my Bermejo cover. I ordered a couple of other covers. And I backed the Kickstarter to get the deluxe edition hardcovers when they come out. So I am looking forward to that. I'll probably have Matt Kent on the show at some point to talk Bad Idea and Berserker. I'm overdue to have him back on the show. So, all right, Manny, finish this up. Most anticipated moment or upcoming series of 2021.
It's funny. I thought maybe I was the only one who felt that way, but I had to really agree with Rocky's sentiment, because when I filled out my sheet originally, I think I told you this. I wrote in big bold letters nothing, and then I underlined it because there's nothing that I didn't have anything to really look forward to. But then I shook it off really quick, and I'm like, oh, I have one thing to look forward to. And you mentioned it already, and that's a bad idea. That's a group of creative talent that I know I can depend on, because I've seen their work when they did it all together over at Valiant, and what they did there, and the crazy community that you introduced me to, where I remember being at some burger joint at like 9:10 at night, and one of the guys is, after eating burgers, for whatever dumb reason, allowing me to look at his original Archer and Armstrong gold book. And then, you know, just, you know, Dinesh was always so hands-on, and so was Warren, and so was the other guys. That's how I met Andy. And now he's over at Brave New World, and you know, just Adam and some of the other guys, and just so many great people who you knew were making good books because they loved it so much. They're just so passionate about it. They're just having fun, having a great time working together, hanging out together. And so now they're doing this on their own over at Bad Idea. I mean, just if you look, just look through the names of people that they're going to be working with, like Matt Kent, Doug Bragwith, Diego Rodriguez, Luis LaRosa, Robert Venditti, Jordi Belair, what else? Marguerite Bennett's going to, Renato Guedes, Matt Hollingsworth. I mean, just names, I mean, I'm sure I'm missing quite a few, but their whole scheme of marketing that they've been promoting it, and it's just been so much fun. And it's been nice to be able to contact Hunter again about books and things like that. And so, I mean, if there's a set of books that I know are going to be good, this is it. These are some titles I could be very, very much excited for. And with that said, I think the excitement now is going to be how many more independent books am I going to be picking up now rather than DC or Marvel books. I think this is going to be the year where by the end of 2021, you're going to have DC big wigs trying to figure out why they can't sell comic books, and why Image, Aftershock, and these other smaller brands are doing so much better. And it's going to be because your creative teams, you're not giving them any freedom, and you don't let people be creative, they'll walk away. And it's the same problem they're having with their films. And so you can't expect them to give them freedom with comic books if they're not even doing it with their big money films and things like that. And, you know, who knows? DC might bring Scott Snyder to start writing comic books too. Sorry, Zack Snyder to come start writing comic books too, you know? So
I might swear off DC if they were to do. If they put Zack Snyder on a book, I might just be like, nope, I'm noping right out of that. Not just his book, but all DC. Like that'd be tough for me to support them making a decision like that.
So yeah, luckily for us, we have Dinesh, and we have that amazing group of people who are going to give us good books. But hey, you know, Aftershock, Image, and some Dark Horse books too. They're going to be right there with us. I really wish. We can get a couple of good Valiant series. You remember how good Valiant used to be?
Yeah. But now all those creators are a bad idea. But I mean, Vault Comics, Titan, Boom, Upshot. We talked about some of their, you know, AWA. And the other cool thing about Bad Idea books, so there's no page count. It's not like this is a 20, right. This is a 20 page issue, this 24 page issue, whatever. The book is as long as it needs to be. It's as long as the creator needs to tell that story. So, but that doesn't mean the price goes up. They're always, I think, $4.99, regardless of the page count. So
$3.99 per issue. I'm just on their website now. It says they're always $3.99 per issue.
$3.99 no matter what page count. So yeah, definitely looking forward to that. So, great. I'm glad you guys had something to actually talk about, rather than most anticipated moment just being your next old fashioned, or your next next drink you're gonna take for
my next old fashioned with Whistle Pig at a Houston's.
Yeah,
that's 2022 anticipation.
Looking forward to that, but I could step over there when we're done recording and have my next old fashioned with Whistle Pig, you know, as soon as I make it. So
I think I'm buying a bottle of Whistle Pig for our 1 year anniversary coming up. So
sounds like a plan. I always I always recommend Whistle Pig. It's my favorite favorite bourbon, favorite rye. So
you're the only way to get
the Whistle Pig podcast. What's that?
Might be the only way to get through DC books this year.
It might be. Anyway, thanks to you guys for taking the time to join me and do this thing. I know it's a lot of work to go back and look at a whole year of books and your picks. Look forward to doing it again next year, where I expect my entire list to be nothing but independent. I will say that, listeners, if you have other picks that you want to mention to us, we always love to hear from listeners. Hit us up on social media. Links are in the show notes. And the other thing that I'll say is if you can get on a schedule of, and this is what I say this every year, but this year I'm really going to do it. Once a month, I'm going to go through my books I've read for this month and mark down like favorite moments and favorite covers. So I don't have to spend hours and hours trying.
Are you already behind on January?
Yeah, exactly.
So you're talking about it.
Try to search my alcohol-addled brain trying to remember my favorite moments or my favorite covers from the previous year. So
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of future state moments there.
Oh my God. I can't think of any. Maybe the Jackson Hyde moment could be a moment, but that would probably be the only thing that I can think of off the top of my head. So anyway, any last thoughts, Manny?
I'm happy for the comic book shops that were able to hang on. And I'm very happy for all of the people who actually went out and bought books, made sure to keep their local comic shops in business. I know that the two shops here in our area, Heroes and Legends, they're still open, they're still kicking, they're still doing all right. And then I know that our friend Andy over at Brave New World, he's hustling and bustling every Wednesday night with kind of auctions. And it's always so much fun. And I hate watching it. I stopped watching it because I always buy stuff. and it was always like $40. I'm like, nope. All right. Sorry, Andy. I love you. But you taking my money, man. And it's too easy. I'm at home. And I'm like, claim. Yep. And then next thing you know, here's the bill. It's like, well, here it is. And then it's just like, oh, shoot. I spent. But yeah, just keep supporting your local comic book shops. Try independent books. Don't just think you have to stick to the Avengers or the Justice League. You know, find out who you we've talked about it through everybody's ears and everything. Just find what kind of books you like and ask your local comic book shop recommendations, or listen to us. We're going to tell you what's good.
That's right. All right, Rocky, any last thoughts as we finish up?
Let's make 2021 better than 2020. Let's try to strive to be happy. Don't be afraid to walk into a comic shop, read a comic book, whether you buy a graphic novel whether you buy it at a mall or you order it online. You know, support your local comic shop, preferably, and read a comic and get involved in pop culture and listen to more podcasts and have some fun. Let's have some fun and let's pray for the return of the comic convention, because boy, oh boy, nothing like a 2020 pandemic to make you appreciate how good we had it before we had to wear a mask.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good way to end it. Have some fun in 2021, everybody. So as always, want to thank you listeners for all your support throughout the year. Last year, Comic Source continued to grow in numbers. We couldn't do it. Wouldn't do it without you. If nobody was listening, I don't know if we'd be going on our eighth year doing this now. So again, thanks for your support all year long, and thanks for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.